We are back on the podcast.
Hey,
Yeah. Sorry. That was weird. All right. So we're back on the podcast, Pop Chunk Movies.
All right.
It's a special episode with some special people. No Evan tonight. Evan couldn't make it. He's working.
He's peeling potatoes.
He's peeling potatoes. He's peeling H-bombs. So he may join us mid-episode. He may not. We'll see. But my original plan was to do... We're still doing the one-year anniversary, obviously. Every time I make a plan, it always goes to hell. So since I was joined with this week, Corey.
Say hi.
And Dexter.
Hello.
Some musical friends of mine. I figure that we're going to do... top five fictional movie bands. Movie bands that only appear in movies. That was so redundant. So because Evan wanted to do anti-heroes, so when me and him sit down to do another podcast, that's the one we're going to do. But for now, it's just a straight up top five episode of Pop Junk Movies. I figured you play drums, you play guitar, I play bass. Holy shit, we should start a band.
Hey, we're a band.
we should start a Misfits cover band called Rat Frank. Just saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But,
very nice.
So, I figure we'll start with what we are drinking, because we didn't do that last week. And it's a special occasion of what we're drinking, because the October beers are out. Yay, it's August.
Talk about, jumping the gun.
Yeah, I am enjoying a delicious Shipyard Pumpkinhead, and it is delicious, like I previously discussed. Corey, what are you drinking?
I have the same, as well as a fine Samuel Adams Oktoberfest.
Dexter.
I am drinking a Elusive Traveler. This one is the grapefruit.
And how is it?
Elusive Traveler Shandy. It's very good. It's still summery, so we're not in fall quite yet.
Me and Corey have already made the transition into autumn.
We've broke out the hoodies. Dexter's still drinking in his
and
shorts.
This one is a... Time Traveler.
Okay.
And it's a strawberry.
So, like...
It's seasonal, so we're still in the season.
All right, fair enough. I have a clash of seasons right now, but that's fine. So that's what we're drinking currently. And what we've been watching, I just wanted to talk about one particular movie that I saw this week that Corey saw as well.
Yeah.
This is currently in the movie theaters. This is a movie called The Guardians of the Galaxy. And, wow... I was very, very impressed with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
Corey, what were your thoughts on
it? I was also very impressed. I mean, obviously, it's tracking like 1,000,000% in Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Currently on 92%, which is really good.
Yeah. It's still, I mean...
I think that the main thing that I took away from this movie was it's probably the most fun Marvel movie. It's the funniest.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't have a lot... I wasn't fully invested because I'm not a huge fan of James Gunn. I wasn't a huge fan of Super and a couple of his other movies, but he did a great job with this one.
Yeah, he did.
He held it together nicely. He helped write it. I know there's like some sort of weird, not controversy, but like there was a script and I think he doctored it. I don't know. I don't know the actual...
I don't know the comings and goings. If I had to call it anything, though, I think it's a very homogenous movie. It's not too funny. It's not too serious. It kind of has... That's a nice blend.
I don't know if I want to say it was better. I mean, I love Captain America 2, Winter Soldier. I had more fun at this movie, but I think, like, story-wise, it's really basic. It's like, we just need to get this thing. And that's the
kind
plot.
Of all I needed.
Yeah.
That's really all I was looking for. Let's talk about the cast a bit.
Yes, let's talk about the cast. I was very high on Chris Pratt going in. I'm a huge fan of Parks and Rec. He's really funny on that show.
It makes me want to watch Parks and Rec now.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a small part of that, of a big ensemble cast. But he's really good in the movie.
You'll fall in love with Chris Pratt.
Yes. I was very impressed with Dave Bautista as Drax. He was really good, and he provided
the shit out of that movie.
He provided some really funny moments in that movie.
Yeah, he did.
Mm. Beer break.
Yeah, beer break.
And the two voice acting jobs, I'd say that Rocket Raccoon kind of steals the movie, which is weird because he's a CGI raccoon.
Yeah.
Voiced by Bradley Cooper, but he's... So almost close it's to a, being the main
a,
character.
It's a complex character.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like the ins and outs of just like this like engineered raccoon that like I don't
There's
know.
More to him than you think.
Yeah, and I thought Lee Pace looked amazing as what's-his-face, Ronan.
Yeah.
He looked really cool, and he was a good villain. Some of the Marvel movies, like, Loki just, like, eats up the screen when he's on in any of those movies. But, like, I thought the villain in, the Guy Pearce villain in Iron Man 3 was kind of meh. I thought the villain in Thor 2 kind of sucked. But he was on point in this movie.
Are we allowed to mention somebody else that was
no,
in it?
No, I'd rather not.
Okay.
No. I don't want to get into spoiler territory, but...
Yep.
It's a very...
Gamora looked really good, too.
Yeah, Gamora looked awesome. She was really good. Just all... And can't forget Michael Rooker as Yondu. He was awesome.
Michael Rooker was good.
Yeah.
There's a couple of good small parts that I thought
John
was really
Riley.
Good. John C. Reilly was
Glenn
in
Close.
It. Glenn Close
Nova
was in
Prime.
It. Just to mention a couple. I mean, I went in not really with huge... I didn't have, like, giant expectations.
Yeah, I tried to temper my expectations a little bit going in.
I went in really thinking, I was like, this is going to be fun. Time to have some fun at the movies.
Yeah.
Let's have a good time. And
sometimes
I was not let down.
Yeah,
I was not let down at all.
I highly recommend this movie. If you like the Marvel movies, then you're going to love Guardians of the Galaxy. That's kind of the overall sentiment that I came out of this.
My heart wants to give it a 5 out of 5.
No, I'm not ready to go 5. I was on the way out of the theater,
but my
I was
brain,
really excited.
My brain is still going to say a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, totally.
Solid 4. I'm going to buy it on Blu-ray. I'm
going to
see it again tomorrow. Evan's going to come with me.
Cool. That was another thing I came out of this thinking, all right, I would see that again in theaters. It's a very fun theater movie.
If you see it, like I saw it opening night, IMAX 3D,
mm-hmm.
blew my mind. Tomorrow when we go, we're going to see it standard,
hopefully. I saw it standard just in the AMC, and it was great. I sometimes get distracted by the 3D. I'm not a huge fan of 3D.
I'm definitely not, but
this
was the first Marvel movie that I saw that there's a couple of scenes in it
mm-hmm.
before the action starts, and it looks like a splash page.
Yeah,
it
looked great.
It
really did.
Absolutely stunning. So if this is what we got for comic book movies now.
And it's really a testament to Marvel and to Disney that they're taking not B characters but C characters and they're dominating the box office. You know what I mean?
If the fact that they can take Guardians of the Galaxy and make a better movie than the last Superman movie that came out. I mean,
dude,
our bench warmers are kicking the shit out of your
starting lineup. Exactly. Yeah, good call.
Like, that is fucking,
that's something to
mention.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So they have it. No worries there.
Yeah. So looking forward to Avengers 3. This was a good table setter for Avengers 3.
I really hope that we kind of see some of these characters on the side. They've already greenlit Guardians 2. Which, on the way to the theater, I was like, come on, guys, really? I haven't seen the first one.
Yeah.
It doesn't even really exist yet, and you guys are releasing the second one. On the way home from the theater, I was like, let's make 7 Guardians of the Galaxy movies. Let's just churn one out once a year, make it like Star Trek.
There you go.
I could watch them forever.
Cool. So, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy, we were both big fans of that. Highly recommend it. Go see it. Yeah, that was it. I was glad Evan's not on this episode because he hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
He hasn't had time, but he's going to go tomorrow.
But we'll get his editorial review next time.
Absolutely. So that's all I've been watching. I watched another movie, but Evan watched it too, so I'm going to wait to do an episode with him.
See, I missed a hot take your last episode, and I actually watched everything, almost everything, except for Expendables 3 that you guys watched. I watched the 90s documentary.
Did you watch Snowpiercer?
No,
that's
I didn't watch that
we
yet.
Hot
I gotta. I know.
We were real
I'm
hot.
Super
that was
sold
my
on
first
it.
5 stars of 2014.
Yeah,
so far.
I looked
was
it up.
Real, real high on that movie.
I listened to the episode at work, and that was the one.
Shouldn't you have been working?
I was doing work. I may have used my 15-minute break to research Snowpiercer to see about that.
Good stuff.
Because I definitely got sidetracked, but. Yeah, I mean, I watched the 90s documentary when that was on.
That's really good. Yeah,
that was really
Geo
good.
One, yeah.
Well worth the watch. It kind of brings a lot of stuff back. Kind of brings like a lot of stuff. I mean, it really seems everybody thinks about like 9/11 till now
mm-hmm.
for everything that's going on. But when you go back and you watch it and you see Waco, Texas, and you see Oklahoma City bombing and Unabomber and that stuff. And you really
Jeffrey
kind of
Dahmer,
realize,
like all that
I mean,
stuff. They get into Columbine, obviously.
The thing is that we get caught up in current events, which is obviously really important, but the things have been fucked up for a long time now.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really give you like comfort. But like you kind of know, like as time goes on, we're always going to be in the shit.
Totally.
And I watched West of
which
Memphis.
I haven't watched yet, so we don't have to really get
so
into
we
that.
So we don't have to. We're not going to go there.
I say, let's bust into this top five because I'm good. So we wanted to do top five fictional movie bands, bands that exist only in movies, not in real life. I wrote an editorial piece on Pop Chunk Movies about this probably about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I did my top eight. So I changed my picks around a little bit from that, if anyone's familiar with that article, which you're probably not. Actually, you said to me that...
I pointed out to you, if you Google search one of the movie bands, I don't want to say it in case if
it's not on my list.
All right, so if you Google search Loveburger Band from Can't Hardly Wait, the first Google search that comes back
is
the Chop 8
list
article from Pop Junk,
yeah.
which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Nice. To be a number one hit, I guess.
So I guess let's just dive right in. You got a list, right? You got a top five?
Yes.
All right. So let me start. If we have crossover, I apologize, but I like these episodes because I can do a little splicey and put in some clips of
some
music. I have a
feeling we're going to be hearing some of
these. We are going to be hearing some of these for sure. So my first fictional movie band on my top five list, you probably have this, I'd be surprised if you didn't, is a band called Sexbomb. Is this on your list?
I have a ton of stuff right, from the
so
list, so we can
Sex
talk about
Bomb it. Is the Scott Pilgrim, it's his band from Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, 2010, Edgar Wright. It is Scott on bass, Steven Stills on vocals and guitar, Sex Bomb. Is this on your list?
I have a ton of stuff.
Alright, so
Sex
Bomb is the Scott Pilgrim, it's his band from Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, 2010, Edgar Wright. Scott on bass, Steven Stills on vocals and guitar, Kim Pine on drums, and Young Neil, the biggest fan and bass understudy.
Which I love Allison Pill.
Yeah, she's great.
I do.
And, so yeah, Sex Bomb is Scott Pilgrim's band. It plays sort of like a big, it's kind of like a big plot point, sort of.
They have their B-side, Launchpad McQuack.
Yep. I had to also mention their best song, Garbage Truck.
Track is We Are Sex Bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And they, a little bit of, trivia for you, the music was written by Beck.
Yes, I knew that.
Oh, very nice.
And the and if you didn't realize, the title of the name of the band is a reference to the Ba-Bomb from Super Mario Brothers. Like the little bomb So, Sex Ba-Bomb is my number
it's
five.
It's a very
pick.
Video game movie.
Yeah, you know what? I love Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. I almost want to say it's underrated at this point because it doesn't fall into like the Edgar Wright pantheon of like the Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, World's End. It kind of like it's under the radar a little bit. That movie is such like a pop culture like
it really is.
It's a pop culture buffet.
I mean, I absolutely loved the comic.
Comic's great.
Loved the comic. I have kind of a bad taste in my mouth of Michael Cera.
Yeah, but
so,
I can get past.
But
I don't
can get past Michael Cera in this movie.
Yeah, and it has some really, it has a lot of fun, like the part with Chris Evans.
Oh yeah,
is great. The part with Brandon Routh is pretty great. What's his name? Jason Schwartz.
Yes.
Schwartz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Schwartzman.
Sure.
I don't know. It's
that guy.
Use the Schwartz.
So yeah, my number five. Fictional band is Sex Bomb. Corey, what do you got for number five?
Number five, I'm going to go with, this is a double up.
Okay.
We have the Max Rebo Band.
Yep.
And or Figrin Dan and the Modal Nodes, which I wanted to be able to put that in there. Obviously, Max Rebo is the blue sentient plush elephant from Return of the Jedi.
All right, so
and Figurin Dan in the modal notes is the specific name of the Cantina Band.
See, that's good. I'm glad you actually dug a little bit deep and didn't just say the Cantina Band.
Yes. No.
All right, so let's Figurin cross Dan let's cross over notes. A little bit, because my number four is the Max Rebo Band from Return of the Jedi from 1983, directed by Richard Marquand. They are a trio, Max, Droopy, and Sly Snoodles. And I'm not talking about the fucking, the rewritten, reissued Jedi with the whole music video and everything. No, I'm talking about just the one part in Jedi when they perform their little song. Oh, I wrote it down. The name of their song is Lepti Nick, means work it out. They are a Huttese pop band. That was a Huttese pop song. The lyrics are about dancing, according to the lead singer. Tragically, the band died aboard Jabba's sail barge, entertaining the crowd one afternoon when a group of radical religious terrorists attacked the ship and killed everyone on board.
AKA Jedi.
Yes.
The best part is they're basically like the Andrew W.K. of the Star Wars universe. Like, they're just singing songs about partying down.
Yeah,
exactly.
They wanted to work
it
out.
For Figurin Dan and the modal notes, their members are Figurin Dan and five other Biths from the planet Clack Door 7. They're portrayed by Rick Baker and a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
They
were dudes in suits.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
Their hit was called You Know It.
Is that the...
And that's that's You Know It.
That's awesome.
Better known as the alien band from Mos Eisley Cantina, the music from a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away never gets old.
No.
So...
Very cool. So
we went deep with that.
So so I guess that's my number four. So we'll go on to your number four.
Oh Jesus!
Yeah.
One of my notes for Max Rebo Band was being able to play the keyboard so mean with fingers so fat.
He may have dropped the note here and there with his droopy nose.
He might have.
Mm-hmm.
This by no means is a definitive top five list. This is called not picking the same eight that was on the other one. I'm gonna go with Huff and Dobek from Step Brothers.
Nice.
When they were Prestige Worldwide.
Yes.
Their main track was called Boats and Hoes.
Yes.
And you know it's a it's an important track because yesterday the three of us were on the Spirit of Boston
for
work. And I heard at least seven different people say Boats and Hoes.
Yeah, that reference was made quite a few times yesterday.
The Pinta of the Santa Maria.
It's true. The lyrics, I don't have any on hand. But the lyrics, if there's an extended clip on YouTube of the whole music video, and it's friggin' hilarious. They're swapping your poop deck. There's all, it's rife with double entendres.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else you want to add to that, Corey?
No, Boats and Hoes.
Boats and Hoes. My number three is a movie that came out in 2000, directed by Cameron Crowe. The movie is Almost Famous, and the band is Stillwater.
Stillwater.
Stillwater from Almost Famous. Did you know there was actually a 70s band called Stillwater? I mean,
I've heard of Sweetwater.
There is a Stillwater.
But I've never heard of
Stillwater. Not very successful.
No,
that band consisted of Jeff Beebe, played by Jason Lee, Russell Hammond, played by Billy Crudup. There was also Larry Fellows. Ed Valancourt, and they're best known for their song Fever Dog, and they opened up for Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
That was like the scene when he went to go interview.
Jason Lee got shocked.
And Jason Lee does get shocked at one point.
Right in the kisser.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of that movie. I don't know how you guys feel about that movie.
Another huge Cameron Crowe fan.
Cameron Crowe is hit or miss with me. This one was a hit, though. I really like that movie a lot.
Being in a band, I'm a fan of a lot of
rock
and roll band movies.
Right.
So, yeah.
And and it was like a cool, like, they kind of captured the 70s and the whole thing. And it's kind of autobiographical because that's what Cameron Crowe did. Was he was like a kid, like interviewing like all those cool bands.
Yeah.
I think the band kind of represents Led Zeppelin. I would imagine that was his go-to. I think my favorite performance/part of that movie is anytime he's talking to Lester Banks, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. those parts are always really good. But Stillwater was not on my original list, so it made my new list. My new revised list. My number three is Stillwater. Corey, what do you got for number three?
My number three is also kind of a double up. You can choose whichever one you like better.
Okay.
It's either Burko or Rex Manning from Empire Records.
Okay, yeah, there were two fictional bands in that movie.
Yeah, so
I would have to go with Rex Manning.
You like Rex Manning.
It's No Applause.
He was, what, No Applause? His title track was Say No More, Monet More.
Yeah.
Because it was Rex Manning Day, which I'm pretty sure takes place in April. I don't remember the... There is an exact date for Rex Manning Day. There was a couple of weird...
There was an appearance in that movie by a real band that you may have thought was fictional, which was Gwar. Which was Gwar.
Oh.
They were there.
He wanted, Mark, you play a mean guitar. Yeah. Why don't you join the band?
Yep.
So, Burko was played by Coyote Shivers, that 90s guy.
Yeah.
He was married to Polly Perrette from NCIS.
Okay.
She was like the cool goth chick.
Okay.
Real musician.
Mm-hmm.
Actually performed. I don't know if Renee Zellweger actually sang at the end of the movie.
I hope not.
It sucks enough to possibly be really her, so.
Yeah, that's true.
But I can't have a music list and not include Empire Records because the real soundtrack that's on that it's fucking spot on.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's got a lot of good. It's a good 90s movie.
Yeah, I will accept Empire Records. It's not a great movie, but it's good.
But
it's adequate.
Yeah, it gets the job done.
Yeah, cool.
With today?
Pissing through this list right now.
I know we are. Why are we speed round?
I don't know. That's just kind of how the podcast has been working lately.
It's fine.
All right, my number two is from a movie that came out in 1988, directed by John Landis. This movie is called Coming to America. And this band is Sexual Chocolate.
Sexual Chocolate. They play so fine, don't you agree? I believe the children are our future. Thank you. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride.
Can we not have a list
and
not mention Sexual Chocolate?
Yep.
Sexual Chocolate played mostly church functions and Whitney Houston covers in the Jackson Heights area of New York City.
Yep.
It's true.
Yeah.
Sexual Chocolate's frontman Randy Watson was also famous for playing Joe the Policeman in the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama.
Oh, wow.
Which he says during his intro. It's like a whole little soliloquy he gives.
Yeah.
That's a really fun movie. It still holds up. That's a funny-ass movie.
It's on Netflix.
Yes, it is.
On Netflix.
Yes,
and Randy Watson, played by Eddie Murphy.
For one, he plays like seven different people in it. One of the funniest parts is when he's talking to his dad, James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
And he was talking about
Joffrey Jaffa.
King Joffrey Jaffa. Jaffa Joffrey.
Yeah.
And he was like, and he was talking about being like betrothed, having to go get married. And he was like, you know, Dad, I'm not ready. And he was like, Son, I thought you always had sex with your bathers. You know, like the women that.
Yeah,
and he was
exactly.
like, No, Dad, of course. That's not what I'm talking about. But I don't know why. That part always slays me
but,
every time.
Sexual Chocolate, they were in the Powder Blue Tuxedos.
Yes, they were.
Yes.
They did cover a Whitney Houston song, and then they passed around the donation tray, and the guy put his trash in there.
Curl.
They did have an awesome Jerry Curls and donations. I thought it was a trash.
It had to have been Soul Glow.
It was all. Everybody had Soul Glow. That,
everybody.
Eric LaSalle, friend of the podcast, played the evil boyfriend with the Soul Glow hair.
And when they got off the couch, it was stains.
Yeah, the whole family, and they all had the stains on the couch.
Yes.
Big fan of Coming to America. That is a very fun movie. So that's my number two. Corey, what do you got for number two?
I'm having a hard time picking a real one, so I'm going to pick one that's not on that previous list.
Yes, please.
And then we'll talk about those during honorable mentions.
Yeah, there's a lot of honorable mentions.
My number two is going to be a band that you guys might know as the Kinky Wizards. Other of you might know as Barry Jive and the Uptown Five.
Yep.
Sonic Death Monkey, or my favorite, Kathleen Turner, Overdrive. And that's all the bands from High Fidelity.
Yep, all Jack Black's character. His character had all the best band names.
I'm pretty sure he had different band names than that, too.
That's it's kind of a trope that they didn't steal, but the Chris Pratt character from Parks and Rec, every time somebody says something that's, he goes, I want that as a band name. He always calls it. So I always thought that was kind of an ode, maybe, to High Fidelity.
Which is also another really good music movie.
Yeah, Cameron Crowe?
Yes.
Question mark?
Yeah, well, I'll accept it.
Okay.
We, the cool thing about High Fidelity, it's kind of like Pop Junk Movies, the movie.
Yeah, because all he's constantly does is making do, like, top five lists.
And he's like, top five songs to break up to, top five, you know, first kiss songs, whatever. He just has like a million lists.
Yeah.
And the other thing is when him and Jack Black, they're all, everybody who works in the record shop, and all they do is they just shit on all of the customers that come in.
Not Cameron Crowe, I apologize. Stephen Fierce. I knew it was adapted from a Nick Hornby book, but
there we go. Close enough. But you know, and they're talking to Jack Black and to a lesser extent John Cusack, and they're like, you guys just shit on everybody because you feel like you're like the unappreciated scholars, and when people don't know as much about music as you guys do, you feel like you need to attack them. And I think, I don't know about you, but I know definitely both of us have been...
Yeah, we were that guy for a long, long time.
Yeah, have been guilty of being that elitist
definitely.
Of...
Yeah, because we listen to bands that nobody listens to. That makes us cool.
It does, but you don't have to be a douche about it.
No, I don't care anymore.
So,
but there was that time.
Yes. I liked that Jack Black character because it was kind of representative of that person.
Of everybody.
Of everybody. That
and I think
like
that's
that.
Why that movie's so good is because everybody has been Jack Black. Everybody has been John Cusack in that. We've all had the super
especially
pretentious...
in high school, you're all like, you don't listen... Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
You know, the super pretentious post... Even like post-high school.
Yeah. That,
my adult life is so tumultuous.
Yeah.
I need to make it more important than
so,
it is.
So, sticking to my original list, I kept the number one the same. The number one fictional band of all time for me comes from a movie that came out in 1989, directed by Stephen Herrick. It's a band called Wild Stallions from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I mean, this movie was about two guys trying to start a band and then having an excellent adventure through time. The funny things about Bill and Ted was the fact that their big plan was to hire Eddie Van Halen, thus making them obsolete. You know what I mean?
Yeah, essentially.
Essentially, like, just like making, like, it would just be Van Halen.
And then David Lee Roth kind of did the same thing where he was like, I'm going to hire Steve Vai.
Yeah.
Thus kind of making Van Halen obsolete.
True. That is true.
He's like, oh, I can.
So, as I wrote on my article, I said, many pitfalls hit this band early in its inception, including not knowing how to play their instruments. After deciding that hiring the talents of Eddie Van Halen was unrealistic, they decided the next best thing was traveling through time to build the band that way. This included the addition of the Babes, two 15th century English princesses, a future version of both Bill and Ted. Now that we're dipping into the second movie a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
A weird naked alien named Station, two robot constructs of both Bill and Ted himself, Death, who played bass.
That was awesome.
You might be a king or a little street sweeper, but sooner or later you'll dance with the Reaper.
Yep.
And they had one well-known hit, written by the band Kiss, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, and it somehow saved the world at the end of the second movie.
Yeah.
Kind of unexplained, but it reunited everybody.
It's the message of being excellent to each other.
Yeah.
And party on.
Yeah.
I actually think that those movies kind of hold up a little bit.
Yeah.
They're, campy as shit, but they're still funny as hell.
I think it holds up, though, as much as... Like, I was watching Wayne's World the other, not too long ago, and I'm like, that's kind of a movie that kind of could only ever be made
in the
90s.
Yeah,
like, they couldn't make
it. It holds
up.
It's super 90s, but it's still like a quality movie.
And I mean,
Crucial Taunt was on my original list as well.
Yeah, that was an 80s movie that, like, I watched in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of, like, works out the same to me.
Yeah, totally. So what do you got for number one?
My number one.
I mean, have at it.
No, my number one's an actual number one.
Okay.
They didn't really have a band name, but, School of Rock.
Oh, really?
Like, the School of Rock band from School of Rock.
Huh.
So that is 2003.
Wow, really?
Yep.
Holy hell.
Wow, that's...
That is an 11-year-old movie?
It doesn't seem that long. No.
Yeah, directed by Richard Linklater.
Yeah.
Written by Mike White, who played Ned Schneebly. His neighbor.
Mr. Schneebly.
And, well, his roommate.
Yeah.
And it's a wannabe rock star in need of cash, poses as a substitute teacher at a prep school, and tries to turn his class into a rock band.
And doesn't go to jail.
Joan Cusack.
I have touched all of your kids, and I'm pretty sure they've all touched me. Mm-hmm. And all the parents freaked out. Mm-hmm. But it's got a ton of funny lines. Yeah, Joan Cusack's in it.
Yeah.
Sarah Silverman's in it.
Yeah.
Mike White actually lived in an apartment complex, like, and was actually, like, next-door neighbors to Jack Black.
Right.
And would hear him, like, singing and listening to music and acting like a menace. So he wrote School of Rock. And apparently Mike White doesn't even really love classic rock, but basically was like, Jack Black, you can have any kind of music genre you want.
Right.
And that's what they did. And they feature the Immigrant Song in it by Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And the way that they got that to be able to be done was they had like a party scene of like 1,000 people, and they got them all to chant, "We want the Immigrant Song."
Huh.
So basically Led Zeppelin kind of forced to be like, fine, you guys are allowed to use the rights.
Leave us alone.
Because they never lend their rights out to anybody.
No.
Wow.
But
now they do.
Now they do more because they need
10 years
money.
Later, yeah.
But, you know, whole lot of love in a fucking car commercial, probably.
Yep.
But, no, I mean, it's a cheesy movie. It's probably not, you know, the greatest thing ever, but it still stands up for me. It's a movie that when I'm done watching, I kind of want to pick up a guitar.
Yeah, for, like, the music lover in you, that this movie does kind of rile up a little bit of a...
It kind of, like, encapsulates how you felt about music, like, when you were younger, how you
right.
were like, oh, I'm going to practice 18 hours
yeah.
a day, and it was, like, for the love of music.
Yes. Yes.
And it's kind of, all of his friends are kind of grow up, and Jack Black character is pretty much, like, never lost that childhood dream of,
yeah.
I want to be a rock star,
exactly.
and I'll do it any way possible. And the kids all actually play, which I think is cool.
Yeah, I mean, I saw this movie, like, right around when it came out, and I remember really liking it. I haven't watched it since.
It's been
10
yeah,
years.
It's worth checking out again just to
just
to see how it's still really funny. And plus, I like Jack. I know a lot of people kind of poo-poo on Jack Black.
No, we were big on the whole Tenacious D.
Oh, yeah.
Like
I love
2001.
All
that.
That
was their first album was really good.
I love them in Airborne.
I
thought that's funny as hell. We obviously just talked about High Fidelity.
Yeah.
I don't know, Jack Black.
He
is
kind of
cool.
The greatest song
out,
in
though.
The world. I mean, come
yes.
on, the greatest song in the world.
It's true. It's just a tribute.
that was a big that was a big radio hit.
Yes,
hit
it was.
Time. No, I mean, I think honestly, he really is a very good singer, and they kind of, I think he does movies that he wants. To
I
do
will
and
say
kind
though,
of plays music.
Have you ever seen the Tenacious D movie?
It's very
it's
bad.
Not, it's not good.
But
it
came out
good.
Too late though.
Yeah,
I think the Tenacious D album. I want to say
2001.
Was 2001,
and
they should have made that movie.
Didn't come out until 2004, 2005, I think.
It was at least, or 5, 6.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
definitely
after the
way,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
the
way. Way, like, they missed the,
yeah,
they missed
the
beat
boat
on
kind
it.
Of sailed
yeah.
on that
I
one.
Think even if it was the same exact movie, but right when the album hit, when
yeah,
they were
totally.
Big, I think it would have...
Well, I don't know, I mean, I was still...
It's a really weak movie.
It's weak as hell. I was going to say, like popularity-wise, it might have done more at the time, but it still wasn't that great of a movie. And the movie didn't really capture, like, the relationship between the two characters
yeah,
that they developed in the album. Like,
yeah,
the album itself, like...
I was going to mention that, but for fear of being, like, sorry to talk too deep about the fucking Tenacious
no,
D
go
movie.
Ahead.
No, but it really did, though. It didn't follow Tenacious D
no,
canon.
No,
like, they were supposed to be...
I feel like somebody else wrote it.
They were, like, biblical brother style that
yeah.
They were wow. forging a friendship of rock.
Yep.
Yeah, and then the movie, they, like,
over.
Hate each other. Like it,
Kyle
yep,
Gass
yep.
was, like, taught him how to play guitar.
Yep,
and
yep.
That, but, no, it's not good.
It's not good.
It's not good.
So on that note, let's we'll do some honorable mentions. I wrote down a couple that didn't make my original list that I thought would be interesting. Okay, so I have Banjo and Sullivan from Devil's Rejects, their famous song, "I'm Home Getting Hammered While She's Out Getting Nailed." I still stand by that
nice.
Movie as a solid
nice.
As a solid horror movie.
I still haven't
yes.
seen it like all the way through too, and I hear it's better than House of a Thousand Corpses.
It's much better.
It
than
is so because
I didn't like House of a Thousand Corpses.
I don't want them to do a spoiler or anything, but
it's an old movie.
Yeah,
go for
so,
it.
Yeah, no, it's,
like I saw that movie in the theater because I had saw House of a Thousand Corpses, so I was like, oh yeah, definitely seeing Devil's Rejects. So in the theater, I'm watching it, and then as the girl comes running out of the hotel, and the freaking 18-wheeler comes by and just plows her down, I was like, holy shit, this is an awesome movie.
It's almost like a, it's almost like a more of like a horror, like, kind of crime, like, it's almost like a serial killer movie.
Exactly.
Where the first one's like straight up like horror, like,
I like those movies because they follow their own rules, though.
Yeah, I mean, Devil's Rejects, it's just a fun...
Rob Zombie just kind of makes what he wants.
Yeah, and I'm not a huge fan of everything he's done.
I'm still a fan of the two Halloween movies he did.
I have still haven't seen the second one.
They do. It's definitely weaker between the two.
Right.
But...
I heard it's different. Like,
it
goes in like a different
Malcolm
path.
McDowell was about as good as you can get without Donald Pleasance. And the thing that I liked about it was it kind of got more into psychology of a serial killer than the first one did. But
we can't not talk about Marvin Berry and the Starlighters from Back to the Future.
Oh yeah,
they are a
and they apparently invented Earth Angel by the Penguins.
Yes, yes.
I mean, my hand is broken. I can't play the guitar.
No, we have to talk about the Oneaters from that
the
Wonders.
Thing
You Do. The Wonders.
So, and it's funny. I was in Stop and Shop and I heard That Thing You Do on the radio.
It's a good song. It's like a catchy little
so
pop song.
One thing for me, on a personal note, being a drummer.
Yes.
And the main character is a
drummer.
That movie is like one of my personal favorites because I like drummer movie. Like he finds a band, or they kind of say,
Tom,
"Hey,
Tom Everett Scott."
Yes.
He was
like,
American Werewolf in.
Well, and it's a Tom Hanks
Paris.
Movie. Tom Hanks does good movies.
He directed that movie.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So,
there's a long ass director's cut of that movie that like infers that his character's gay, which I don't know what that would have.
Who,
to...
Who Tom Hanks?
Yeah, that like.
That's weird.
Yeah, but I guess like the 2 hour, it's like 2.5 hours. It's long as shit, and I guess it's not good.
Well, Tom Hanks has a really weird connection to rock and roll.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
you don't really get in his other movies, but I think I forget what anniversary it was, but it was like Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like huge ass concert they did sometime within like the past 10 years.
Yeah.
I want to say it was like 50th anniversary or something. He did the whole monologue at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He had like a huge part in it.
But I think for me with that movie, it's kind of like their drummer ends up getting injured, and they're like, "Hey, do you still play drums? Can you fill in for us?" And then they end up getting big, and then he ends up getting the girl at the end because
the lead
their
singer
guitarist
ends up being
singers. He's
total
a jerk,
douche.
Dick, yeah, whatever. It's like it's
I
a
thought
great,
it was
a great drummer hero movie.
There you go.
So.
You don't get a lot of those.
No, you
it's
don't.
A very
because,
small
because
genre.
The drummer's always in the back, and he doesn't get the girls.
So. I think I don't know. I think it's a real honest movie where you have these bands, and you're the one hit wonders.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it was a
mm-hmm.
Play on the name of the band.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really true, though, especially back in those
in the
50s.
Days, yeah.
50s 60s. And
60s. Yeah. Yeah.
Because that was like. They notoriously swindled people out,
you know.
And it's like, you'll give me $100 for all my songs?
Yeah,
I heard a stand-up comedian, he was talking about it, and he was like, "Where do I sign, Mr. Barry Gordy?"
Yeah.
Well, no,
it was
then,
true, though. It's like, dude, they got fucking taken.
And then the second album, he was all like, "You're going to play these songs, and that's it." He's all like, "Well, what about my songs?" Like, no, the contract says you're going to play these songs now.
Well, I mean, I'll mention Steel Dragon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good honorable mention.
I mean, that's...
You're a big fan of that movie.
Is it a great movie? I can't defend certain parts that you guys don't like about it.
It's a bad movie that I actually enjoy watching, so I'll say that. It's not good.
It's not even like a Boston thing. I like Mark Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
No, he's good in certain movies.
And I don't know. It's the band is awesome. It has fucking Jason Bonham in it.
I was gonna
it
say
it has
Zach Wilde
in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really.
And they wrote a couple like pretty decent metal songs.
It was really.
To, like,
they still play Stand Up and Shout at the Bruins games.
Yes, they do.
And it gets me pumped.
I will say, though, that about that movie, what fucking time, what's the time frame that that movie's
that's
happening?
That's the problem. It's so the timeline's whacked, and the whole middle bit of the movie, I don't stand behind.
Yeah.
When it shows them doing kind of like dumb rock
because
star
why
stuff.
Didn't they just do the Ripper Owen story? Because it's based on Ripper Owen, who was a fan of Judas Priest, who they kicked out Rob Halford, and then he auditioned and got the, you know, got the gig. He got like the lead singer role. Like, why didn't they just retell that story?
Which is kind of like the same thing with Steve Perry leaving Journey, and right. they got, you know, the other guy, the Asian Steve Perry from like the Journey tribute band.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
they found him on like YouTube.
Before.
Yeah.
I mean, but stuff that's really cool about it, I mean, the songs are really good, and that's about the same thing, though, that you have this idealistic kid, and it makes me think of Jason Newsted from Metallica.
Yeah, totally.
He was the ultimate Metallica fan. Cliff Burton passed away. He auditioned, and he got his dream gig.
Yeah.
And was like, holy
and
shit,
it ends
I'm in
exactly the same, where he gets so jaded and disillusioned by the ins and outs, the bullshit of being in that band, that Jason Newsted quit Metallica to form his own metal band that just got, like, lost into obscurity.
Brand, yeah.
Yeah.
He actually has some solo stuff, though, Jason Ellis plays, and it's fucking good.
But it does, and it does mirror that movie, because he leaves Steel Dragon to go play, like, coffee shops.
Which I kind of think, other dude. I kind of think it was a roundabout way of trying to say, this is the end of hair metal, welcome to grunge.
Right, but that's where the timeline gets fucked
up. It doesn't really work out that
doesn't,
way.
Because...
But they have the grunge hair and the sweater.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, so, that movie has so many missteps, because it's like, they act like it's like the advent of like hair metal, and like it's like this big movement, but then you realize this is taking place in present day. It seems like it's taking place in present day, because he goes on to play like coffee shops with that other dude, and they're playing like crappy like grunge alt rock.
Yeah, I just don't think they did grunge right.
But no time passed. Like that didn't.
It wouldn't have happened right away.
No, that's it's all fucked up.
But I mean, aside from weird anachronisms and that, and, I mean, that kind of makes the same. You know, story too, where Mark Wahlberg's like, oh, I wrote all these songs for the next album.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, no, we write all the songs. We have the next five albums written.
So. He, Mark Wahlberg specifically, if we were going on fictional bands, should get mentioned when Dirk Diggler tried to break out and go solo.
And
that's one of my favorite movie moments of all time.
You've got the touch.
Dirk Diggler, take one. You've got the touch.
You've got the power. And John C. Reilly's in there, and he's like, crushed it.
And he is
nailed
rocking
it.
Out.
Turn him up.
Oh, my God, that's so
Turn
good.
His microphone up. I'm shouting. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. I love that part. So I want to do two other honorable mentions, because the hardcore cinephiles will be bullshit if I don't. Blues Brothers, which is a movie I don't love.
I do love it.
It just kind of passed me by.
But the second band in that, though, Merv and the Magic Tones, I thought were hilarious. You never see them play, but they have upholstered, they have like shag carpeting on all their, that's where they got their stuff from. And then there was the Good Old Boys.
Mm-hmm.
We're the Good Old Boys band.
I mean, that movie is just, it's that classic, like, I didn't see it when I should have seen it, and then I saw it, and I was like, meh, like, the hype machine killed it for me.
It's one of those cult movies. It's super quotable. It's probably overquoted.
And the other one is, obviously, Spinal Tap. You can't talk.
See,
and I don't
and
love
weird,
Spinal Tap.
I don't love Spinal Tap. I watched it one time when I had a fucking crazy fever. And I'm trying to watch it, and it was, like, the most depressing. I was hot and sweating. The band breaks up, like, 17 times.
Yeah. I get the satire, and it is funny that way, but it's still, like, not a hugely entertaining movie to me.
I wanted the different movie.
Mm.
I think I expected the different movie.
Again, it was probably a movie I saw at the wrong time.
I watched it because it was, like, one of those things, as a musician, you have to watch.
Yes, exactly.
But,
that's why.
And we've mentioned it a bunch of times, this will probably be last time that I bring it up, but Airheads.
Yeah, Airheads is on my original list.
Which Michael McKean, obviously, from Spinal Tap,
is in it. I was thinking about that too, like, Airheads.
Who's that? Joe Mantegna?
Yeah.
What's that guy's name?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was
he was the voice of Fat Tony in The Simpsons.
Now he's on that, Isn't he on one of those shows?
Probably.
He was one of those crime shows.
He was the DJ, right?
Yeah, yeah. he was Ian the Shark.
He was the DJ.
What's funny is
that movie's a really good cast.
The Sons of Thunder is actually played by the Galactic Cowboys.
No way.
Who are not a they don't call themselves a Christian rock band, but they're all like Christian people in a rock band. Yeah. They sang that song, "Don't Hate Me Because I'm Beautiful."
Don't hate me.
And he's like, "That's what we need." And he's like, "What? Those looks like they're carrying a load in them pants." And he's like, "No, that's what we need is a."
But I mean, that cast. I mean, Brendan Fraser aside, who's not a good actor. You had Steve Buscemi, Adam Sandler. Yes. When Adam Sandler was funny, Michael McKean, Joe Mantegna. I just lost his name. Kramer. Michael Richards.
Yes. And you had David Arquette.
Chris Farley.
You guys are all woohoo and shit.
You know what's funny is when I saw that movie. And they do like they make
Ernie Hudson.
Yeah, Ernie Hudson, good call. They make the Lemmy reference, and then Lemmy's in the movie. I didn't know who Lemmy was when I first saw the movie. I mean, we're talking early 90s when I wasn't a Motorhead fan.
Yeah.
So I didn't really get that.
And who was it written by?
I have no idea.
Don't remember it?
No.
Any guess?
No idea.
One Egon.
Oh, I should have known that. He's in the movie.
He's in the movie.
Yeah, Harold Ramis. The late, great Harold Ramis.
Because he is writing credits on some good shit.
A ton of movies.
But, I mean, no, his hands were all over Airheads.
Cool.
I mean, that whole
That's a
shit.
Dumb movie that is fun. I just like.
It's great. It's kind of like the Perfect Day movie.
Kind of
just sit down. It comes on TV. It used to be on Comedy Central all the time.
Oh, yeah. I remember the first time I saw that movie, I did a double feature, went to the movie store. I got Airheads, and I followed that up with some fucking Tombstone.
Oh,
that
shit.
That was a fucking day that I had.
I think first time I watched Airheads.
That was a day.
It was in some kind of like 7th or 8th grade. I watched it at like a sleepover with my buddy. And we didn't know like, oh, it had Adam Sandler and Steve Buscemi and stuff in it. And when we watched it, it was like, blown away, best movie ever. That was fucking great. They crowd surf, they play prison, they cover the fucking Reagan Youth song.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then the playing the prison, that reference I didn't really, it's obviously a reference to
Johnny Cash.
Yeah, but I didn't get that.
No, I mean, I think it was kind of like, what I like is it was almost like a movie for like mom and dad at the time. There was like a lot of jokes in there that I think they would have got it, but.
Fun for the whole family.
They would have been.
Do you have any more?
He's a goddamn pool man. Did we mention Otis Day and the Nights?
No.
Because you put the Shamalama in my Ramalama Ding Dong. That's a fucking good band.
Again, I'm going to have to go on a limb and say not a movie I love.
Animal House is kind of a tough watch because I don't think it was. I mean, again, it was a 70s.
Like, my parents love that movie.
It's about being a kid in, like, the 60s and such, and we definitely weren't.
I'm just looking to see if there's anything else. The Fireside Band from Rocky One.
Not a movie I love, but I was impressed by Tom Cruise's performance in Rock of Ages. I
have not seen Rock of Ages.
Haven't seen it.
Definitely see it.
Okay.
He did a great job as the lead singer.
I heard it's not great.
It's not great. I mean, you have to be into like musicals, but they do every single song from the 80s.
Yeah, metal, everything.
You know what's strange, though, as far as like music biographical movies that we've never gotten that I feel like they should have. How come they haven't made a Queen movie?
It's a good question. They were supposed to.
You know what I mean?
Sacha Baron Cohen was going to play Freddie Mercury.
That would have
been awesome.
Friggin' insane because he looks like Freddie Mercury.
We deserve a Queen movie.
Yeah.
We deserve a Metallica movie. Because their story's really
good. A real Metallica movie, like a biographical movie.
Yeah, actors playing. A Metallica movie would be very interesting. I wouldn't say no to a Led Zeppelin movie because they had a pretty fascinating.
That would be cool. Or I wouldn't mind one of kind of all of the 80s hair bands. Some Def Leppard.
Oh, like
never spending more than like 20, 25 minutes on each band.
It would have to be a movie about the scene.
So like Whiskey A Go-Go,
the movie. Yeah, the Whiskey. Yes.
Or
like,
CBGB, you know.
Well, they made CBGB.
They made CBGB.
Yeah,
that is,
right.
And that's not a good movie. It was so
Alan Rickman's in it.
It's such a bad movie.
It's very disappointing.
I remember being
really
fucking let down by that
Rupert
movie.
Rupert Grint plays one of the dead boys in it.
Yeah, and like,
and
there's
like,
so many, like, I can't remember the kid who plays Joey Ramone, but he's in a
bunch
of movies.
That's fucking spot on.
But like, I mean, you would think that this movie is gonna, it's right up your, I was like, this is gonna be my new favorite movie. I sat down to watch it.
It was tough to watch.
Like, I think it was Mal and Ackerman played Debbie Harry.
Yeah.
There's just like, the Dead Boys.
It
could have been amazing.
Absolutely amazing.
Well, they shouldn't do just the whiskey. They should do the entire strip. The whiskey.
Yeah, that would be sick.
Yeah.
All of those.
Yeah. But if
Rainbow
they did a
Lounge.
If they did a movie about that scene, though, and then they include all those bands, that would be a lot of fun.
It's like they captured the, like the bar.
There's also rumors,
but they didn't really capture the
scene. I've been hearing for years now there's rumors of The Dirt, the biography on Motley Crue would be a movie eventually. That would be a very fascinating movie.
That would be really cool.
Ozzy would be a really good movie.
Yes. Somewhere at like the end of the second act, he'd kill Razzle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Vince Neil did kill Razzle.
He did.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of movies that like we certainly could have that I feel like we should have by now.
It would be difficult, but I mean, you'd have the whole Randy Rhoads thing.
I think it'd be sick to have Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, but how do you end that? With him just being like an
asshole? No, just have what the fuck has happened in like the meantime, and you see Slash has kind of become, a normal human being. Duff McKagan has a good,
career.
I
guess Duff's been touring with them or has some sort of a connection with Axl.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was doing Velvet Revolver.
Yeah,
he was playing bass with them full time. I don't know what Matt Sorum's doing.
I don't know.
As long as he's not on drugs anymore.
Yeah. Now, Steve Adler, I think, is the guy that got like the most fucked up out of that band.
He was only on Appetite, I think.
But, I mean, that's their essential
album. Yeah, I mean, that really is what made it. But, I mean, the Slash autobiography could definitely be, I don't know why I can't say that word, should be a movie.
Because
I think that's kind of like almost an untold rock and roll story.
Yeah.
And you would get enough of Guns N' Roses, but then you'd get other stuff going on.
Evan's here.
Hey.
Yeah, he's on the podcast.
I gotta pee real quick.
Back on the podcast.
Hey, Evan, when you go to the fridge to grab yourself one, why don't you do the same for me?
Oh, yeah.
We're talking music right now.
Excellent.
I may not edit that out. May just leave that in.
I mean, there's so many things, like, what about the Doors movie?
I have mixed feelings about that movie. The thing about the Doors movie that I love is all the stuff with the actual band.
I do think Val Kilmer is kind of a good fucking actor.
He's a great actor, but I just think that like there's certain stuff with like with Jim Morrison, just like, he's this artsy guy and yada yada yada. It's like, but the stuff with the band when they were making the songs, that stuff's awesome. That stuff's really good.
I mean, there's a ton of...
But that movie's, it's kind of a drag at certain points.
There's a ton of Elvis movies, but I kind of would want to see a movie about Elvis. Because that's a crazy story,
there's a Kurt Russell starring Elvis movie that it was made for TV, and I know Carpenter had something to do with it.
Oddly enough,
I would love to see it.
If you talk to Chris, he knows more about Elvis Presley than anybody else I know. Like... And he'll tell you some shit that you're kind of like, wow, that was crazy. He got swindled out of the money. Mm. He got, there was crazy drugs.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing as like the whole Michael Jackson thing of once he died, people thought it was a big deal. He was on all these drugs. But everybody knew the whole time. Everybody
knew what was going on.
Michael Jackson was doing all kinds of...
Michael Jackson could make a good movie.
But like a real, I mean,
there was that Jackson.
This Is It.
Not that This Is It. That was that basically his.
No.
Remember the Jackson 5 one from VH1.
When he was a little kid.
VH1.
Yeah.
That was sick.
Thank you.
It used to be on all day long at VH1. But
yeah, you can sit there.
We're talking
about
great movies by about artists.
Yeah, like or like possible.
Five. Like the Buddy Holly story?
Yeah, well...
Where he just said, Buddy Holly didn't make it.
It's true, that is literally how that movie is.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Well, let's bring up La Bamba.
Starring...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on, I just want to say that Buddy Holly story starring...
Gary Busey.
Gary Busey.
His best performance of all time. The Busey. Actually, what we're really talking about is, like... music movies they've never made. Like, I would say I would love to see a Metallica movie.
Yeah.
But with kids playing
Metallica. Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, get somebody to play James Hetfield.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when they were living on freaking floors.
Actors.
In apartments.
You could have, possibly, Evan, playing young Scott Ian.
Yeah.
You know, when Metallica lived with other bands, yes. when they had no money.
Well, there's been movies made about, like, singers.
Yeah.
But, like, have we ever had, like, a band, a movie made about well, a band? Like, except
well,
for,
like, The Doors.
We talked about The Doors.
Yeah, well, that,
but that was mostly about Jim
Morrison.
And
then...
which we just lost Ray Manzarek. Right?
Yeah, he
didn't
died
he
recently.
Just pass away?
Yeah, a couple... Yeah, recently.
Yeah.
Very,
I think
like,
the problem
the
with the Metallica movie is that they may focus in on Hetfield, or they may focus in on
I mean,
one
but they
character.
Could do... They could do, like, the whole Napster thing for part
yeah.
of it.
The thing about the Metallica story, though, it doesn't really have, like a definitive end. I think if you took something like the Pantera story... That has a definitive end.
Yeah. Yeah, it has a horrible end.
It has a horrible fucking end, which would make... I mean, I'm sorry.
Vinnie Paul's still playing, but... I mean,
yeah.
But
which,
I mean,
Me and Evan were just watching some old Pantera stuff, because we've been watching, like, a lot of Typo Negative clips, which obviously, that would be kind of, for me at least, would be a really cool movie, would be, like, the Peter Steele story.
Mm. Well, to backtrack a little bit...
Is the Peter Steele story interesting?
I don't know.
I think it's interesting, but...
I just want to say, there's a lot of bullet points about the Metallica story that would be really interesting. You highlight the Dave Mustaine, him getting kicked out of the band early. You highlight the death of Cliff Burton, hiring Jason Newsted.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
Said, like, the Black Album blows
went from,
up.
Went
Napster.
From opening up for Ozzy
and
to
then,
basically headlining
during
a bigger crowd.
Getting burned in Montreal.
Burned.
And then...
Guns N' Roses not playing for them.
Yeah, the riot in Montreal.
The riot
in Montreal.
Be part of it. Bob Rock killing the band.
Yeah, well, I was
going to
say, and then there's some kind of monster power where the band basically implodes on itself.
Them getting clean would be like...
That would be the end. That would be the end. They clean up and
they
come out
hair.
With Death Magnetic, which I don't know if that made a ton of money, but it was a really successful tour.
I mean, watching the Metallica movie, I can't remember exactly... What
I don't
it was
think it would
called.
Have a good
some
ending.
Kind of monster.
No, the other one, their fictitious one.
What?
What was the one that it's basically a concert movie?
Oh fuck!
And then
that
the,
movie sucks.
That was awful. But watching the concert parts though
mm-hmm.
was, you know, really kind of cool
I
to
mean,
see Metallica.
It's an apocalyptic nightmare. You're not gonna forget.
It's an ape suit. You can't get out of.
I mean, a Metallica movie would be pretty good, but. I mean, I hate to say it, but I think a Megadeth movie would be more interesting.
Yeah, but that ends with him getting super religious.
Yeah, but I mean...
Because his book, his autobiography is really interesting, and then he just, like, converts to, like, Christianity and, like, gets really weird and conservative.
But, I mean, my point is that he was way more out of control, drug and alcohol.
Oh, way more out of control. And that's why I said earlier that an Ozzy movie would be really interesting.
Well, that's what... I mean, I brought up the Slash biography, and he talks about... He talks about smoking crack with Dave Mustaine and stuff. I mean, like, they went dark.
Yeah.
That was
crazy
fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what I was saying about Type O is we saw so many clips of when they went on tour with Pantera.
Mm.
And then being able to see, you know, Pantera back live again, it kind of, you know, reminds you of, holy shit, what a good band that was.
Type O was never, like, on top, though.
They were more cult status.
That movie wouldn't fly because nobody knows who they are except for like hardcore metal fans from the 90s. So, but like the thing is, like everybody knows Metallica. Like them or not, they're like the Led Zeppelin of our generation.
I mean,
honestly, they're one of the biggest bands
yeah.
ever.
I wouldn't mind seeing. I wouldn't mind seeing a biography movie of kind of like the second coming punk scene. Not necessarily like the 77, like Ramones and
you're talking
Sex
about like
Pistons
the hardcore
Splash.
Of the 80s?
I'm talking, no, more like...
Because Get
like,
in the Van, you could take Get in the Van, the Henry Rollins book,
exactly.
and turn that into
yeah,
a good
movie. Yeah, you could
movie.
Make that a movie.
Because you'd have like all the guys from all those punk bands, because they all crisscrossed during
those
tours.
I'm even talking about like NoFX, Bad Religion, Pennywise,
like all the California
Alkaline
bands.
Trio, like the Epitaph story.
Yeah.
They could definitely make an Epitaph story movie.
I don't know if that's super interesting, though, because those bands
would be
weren't
to us, and I'm,
it would be super...
I'm being selfish
no,
writing movies that I would want
to
see.
To me, the thing about these movies is there needs to be debauchery. There does.
Yeah.
And in a way, like the Henry Rollins stuff, like there's not as much debauchery because they were kind of on the second side of that,
it's
which
just
was
the
straight
edge
side.
Straight
edge.
I
mean,
yeah.
But that would be still interesting.
I think the other point to it, too, is like when punk bands have debauchery, it's allowed. when you have other bands, like especially pop bands and stuff, and shit's going down, it's not really expected so much. It's almost more taboo.
Yeah. But, I mean, just more music movies in general would be interesting.
Eleven movie
me.
Would be fucking
awesome. Eleven that movie would be cool. Amazing.
Fucking Motorhead.
I mean, and
story.
He's still going.
Awesome.
I mean,
Iron Maiden
Kiss would be cool.
Yeah,
Iron
but
Maiden
again, not
cool.
as, not enough debauchery. Just
that's
a lot of, like,
true,
good metal.
A lot of
Bruce Dickinson reading long books.
Yeah, I was going to say him, like, reading interesting
and
books
pilot.
And flying.
Well, the thing with Iron Maiden is there's a lot of stuff about with, like, Bruce Dickinson, how, like, he didn't really get along with members in the band. That's why he left for a while.
Yeah, there's that gap where he wasn't around.
So that's why I think it would be interesting for an Iron Maiden.
Was it 2000 when he rejoined the band? Brave New World?
Yeah,
99,
yeah.
2000.
Have you seen the biography, The Story of Metal, whatever it is, where they do the, like, different, different branches?
They do the famous tree.
That was awesome.
That was really
good.
That was VH1. I watched that online.
They turned that into a show.
Where the guy travels around and does all these interviews.
Yep.
He did all of the Scandinavian metal bands.
Yes.
And, I mean, there's some weird shit that happened there. Like,
on that show, they even get into, like, the stuff that I hate, and it's super interesting. They went into, like, the Limp Bizkits of the world and, like, the Slipknots, and I'm just like...
Yeah, the episode, I think, was New Metal.
Yeah, and it's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really hate Slipknot. They had some good songs.
But it was interesting. It was a really fucking interesting episode.
Exactly.
And I'm glad for New Metal that they included...
It was an era of music.
They included Killswitch Engage and some good bands
like
that.
Yeah, that turned into, like the metalcore era.
Yeah.
But they, I mean, like, the cool thing that they talk about is, like, American heavy metal bands sing about Satan... Scandinavian metal bands actually burned down churches.
Yes.
That was like real
shit. Yeah, it was like
shit
a battle.
Was
it was like a whole thing against Christianity
and
like Catholicism. No.
There was... What was the band? I can't remember it.
But the dude went to jail? Oh, no. Dude murdered someone.
He
Mayhem.
Yeah.
They
Varg,
killed...
His name is Varg Vikernes.
They really killed, like, the
you
lead
You showed up
singer.
At a good time.
his name was Varg Vikernes. They tried... He claims that they tried to murder him, the members of the band. Well, backtrack. The lead singer of that band blew his fucking head off.
Wow.
And then these guys tried to... they tried to kill this guy, Varg. And he ended up killing another member of the band.
He stabbed him, right?
Yeah, he stabbed him. He went to prison, and then he went to Varg.
But there was, there was weird talks that,
and
like...
he's a fucking huge fucking neo-Nazi,
They supposedly, like, used, like, skull fragments from the singer on, like, liner notes and shit.
Oh, God.
There was a guy that, like, they take death metal so far that he buried his clothes outside for a year.
Can I just say
so
that?
So when he would wear them, they would smell like rotting decay on stage.
I will listen to literally anything, especially anything like metal or punk, but death metal, I can't fucking stand.
It's such a weird...
I hate it.
It's really inaccessible.
The only time I really ever dipped my toe in is I got a little bit into 6 Feet Under and Cannibal Corpse. And even that shit, like, it's really, like, technically sound musically.
Yeah.
But just the vocals just do nothing.
Well, that's like,
me.
I mean,
old,
Cradle of Filth always sounded really good. Like, musically,
yeah.
I really liked it.
And the guy started singing.
But Donnie
it's
sings
like, oh, turn
and
it's, it off.
I'll give you an example of good death metal. Old ass fucking Amar and Amarth
is
considered death metal, but it's really fucking good.
Yeah, and they kind of smartened up. And
then they turned into just metal.
Yeah.
So.
Let's turn it into a very interesting music discussion.
I think this podcast, I know I just walked in, but I'm guessing this podcast maybe established that we're all metalheads, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a metalhead per se, but I went through phases where I listened to a ton of metal. Like, for a long, high school was my metal time. And then that kind of smartened me up, but it segued me into...
You start to get into other bands.
Yeah, it made me like get into punk. Like being a Metallica fan showed me who the Misfits were.
Oh,
you know what
God,
I mean?
Yeah.
Because they were covering Last Caress and Die Die My Darling, and I was like, oh, what are these songs?
Well, that was what it was for me. I remember one party at my house, we had like a pool party or something, drinking beers, and we were talking about like Green Hell and those Metallica songs, and you were like... Dude, you need to hear the Misfits version, and you brought
better.
Like Collection 2.
Oh yeah,
and for me, I was like sold. I am now on this
because you don't realize that, like, because you see the Misfits, you see the Crimson Ghost and the Skull and everything, and you think they're a super scary band. Then you listen to it; it is the catchiest, poppiest punk songs,
melodic,
that you
fucking amazing.
Yeah, and then
really
they
good.
had they had their revival and everybody turned their nose up at it. But if you go back and listen to American Psycho and Famous Monster, that is some great, great catching. They almost kind of went, they had kind of a metal twist.
And for those of you that we haven't lost yet,
I know, right?
The Michael Graves solo stuff that he has now,
he carried that.
Lost Skeleton Returns and Vagabond, those two albums. He really carries the torch. They're both amazing, albums.
Yeah, that's
albums.
Something that I've been meaning to give to you for a while now, is the both Michael Graves albums. But I should probably start you on the revival of the Misfits first and then segue you into...
Yeah, it's if you draw the line at the Glenn Danzig years, you're
missing
you're
out.
Selling yourself short of a completely
amazing
band. I'm a
pretty huge proprietor of the Michael Graves era.
Yeah, and you know what?
So good.
Because I... Really, the Michael Graves era of the Misfits, like, I can listen to any of their songs... I'm a bigger fan of the older Misfits stuff, but there's a couple old Misfits songs I will just turn my nose up at that are not good. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of crap. They were like, they're like the Rolling Stones of punk, where like for every good song, there's two or three crappy ones.
They were, I mean, they were churning out like Beatles-style records. Like they were coming out all the time.
They were constantly.
And
churning
that talks about the scene at the time where obviously there was like no iPods or anything, they would re-record things and come out with a new 7-inch and all this stuff.
Of different songs,
but I mean, that's cool, and that got Tiger Army going and. Mm-hmm. AFI and a whole bunch of other bands.
We had a rockabilly phase for a while there.
Absolutely.
With The Living End and
absolutely.
Reverend Horton Heat.
Yep.
Necromantics.
They're still on it. So I mean they're still it kind of makes me segue into, is there hope for music right now?
No.
Mm-mm.
No.
I don't know if it's us getting old.
No,
or if it's really music.
It's different now because I feel like for one, like you had your aspirations. We're going to start a band. We're going to make it big. There's no money in music
anymore. You
don't
see garage bands.
You don't. It's just everything's more about like advertising. You know, it's the Honda Civic tour, and like it's a different animal now.
Wait, what?
Yeah,
no, really
like that's where the money is.
It really is.
Yeah, right. Like Fall Out Boy presents
sponsorship.
The Honda. Yeah,
all right,
it's all endorsements.
Here's my take. Mm-hmm. Like a year or two back, I ended up getting really into music, like metal, from fucking Europe, and because it's huge over there.
It still lives.
Huge.
Yeah.
And they make a lot of money playing giant festivals because people over there are into that shit.
It's like Wacken Open Air and all those giant.
Wacken
Air.
You know, Open Air. That's like gigantic. Like it's. It has nothing on any festival over here.
When you see things...
I watch Palladium, and it's all like...
I mean, it's
Palladium
basically...
Amazing.
It's basically like Woodstock of metal every single year.
Yeah. And you see things that come through town now, and like you see like the Garden lineup, and it's nothing.
Nothing.
It's nothing.
Was,
it's Queen with that dude.
That guy. Justin Timberlake comes through.
Yeah, it's all
Katy
pop
Katy Perry
acts.
Comes through.
But, you know, like... When I first started going to concerts, rather, like, I saw, at the Garden, I saw Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah,
yep,
I remember that
at the
tour.
Garden.
Yeah. That was 97 Smashing
Pumpkins. Like,
they played with Bush.
I saw Garbage at the fucking, at the Garden.
My sister went to Mansfield back in the day. She saw No Doubt headline, opening band, I'm blanking, now I suck.
Mm-hmm.
But
point being, just like rock music, alt rock, metal, like they were a big deal. We saw Pantera at the Garden. We saw Pantera at the Civic Center in Rhode Island, I believe, at one point. We saw them in Worcester.
Some Megadeth at the Avalon.
Yeah, Megadeth at the Avalon. Like
when you ask the question, is there hope for music? I would say yes, but not in America.
But
not
it's
here.
In it's
not
on
in
your
America.
iPod. That's where it is.
Yeah.
The hope for your music. And it kind of sucks, though, because, I mean, I think for all of us, you think about, like, oh, that was my first band. Now we're all getting to, you know, kind of the age of, like, oh, if I had kids, like, what's going to be their first concert? What's going to be, or nieces and nephews? When am I going to go take them to see?
What really, like, digital music is awesome, but it killed albums. I don't buy albums anymore.
That's true.
I don't.
That's
like,
true.
I mean, I buy them
it's
on
good
iTunes,
to have,
but...
Like, when you went there, you had that, like, in your hand.
Yes,
there was. And a, I was using a lighter. Well, it was a take
collection.
The plastic
Yeah.
it was a collection.
No, like you anticipated, like you know, holy shit! In 2 months, you know, the new Alkaline Trio.
I read liner notes.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
I mean, we had lyrics. And
you're like,
stuff.
Yeah, you're opening up the inside and reading the lyrics.
Remember,
so.
We knew when albums were coming out. Like,
right.
Like,
there was the board at Newbery Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would go every Tuesday and you would read the board and you would say what comes out in fucking.
You go to
like,
Newbery Comics now and what's like the dead section?
And that sucks because
well, sometimes
our,
we would get a single
our
from,
kids
another,
don't
from
have
somebody
that.
Else with
yeah.
the new album.
That sucks. Our kids won't have no. that.
The last time I knew when an album was coming out and was eager to for when that album was coming out and like saved the date was when the new Amon Amarth came out.
Yeah.
And that just happened to be like the best metal album of that
yeah,
year.
Yeah, a lot of people voted that
I think,
yeah, best, metal,
best
album.
Metal album of the year.
I think the last album I went to like go buy in a store because it was coming out was the third Killswitch Engage album. Because we got like a free t-shirt. I think I went to Circuit City before they
went. Dude, I was going to say, that was like 2006.
Yeah, right before,
which,
as they were going out of business.
I would say, if you ask me, Evan, what's the best... or greatest last metal band to come out, and I would say it's got to be Killswitch. Is the last
great American
the last
metal
American
band.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Because I mean, Shadows Fall's really good too, but they didn't get the
they
same commercial.
They didn't
success
blow up
that
like yeah.
They didn't get as big.
Thing about Killswitch is they went on Warped Tour. And
yeah.
They made a lot of fans.
They
that
kind
way.
Of honestly,
yeah.
they kind of crossed genres.
Yeah, totally.
They did
really
all the huge,
well.
Like festivals, like they did metal fest.
But I mean,
yeah.
I think about bands that we used to be super into and anticipate albums. Coheed and Cambria was one of them. I mean, and it's you just realize like these bands can't go on forever. They're not always going to make these awesome albums every single time. But it's just. Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
now that we've depressed
so this,
all the music fans out there.
So this was Pop Drunk Music.
Yeah. I hope you're...
We just make a new podcast?
Maybe. Well, no, I mean, it was a good segue because we talked movie, music.
Real quick, did you guys talk about Purge Anarchy?
No, I was going to wait until
another
episode. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, because that was the movie. I teased that there was a movie that the two of us watched.
Yeah, I gotta get to the source and watch more of those.
We talked Guardians and did...
briefly.
Yeah, briefly. No spoilers. But I figure this is a good wrap-up point. We talked a lot of music, so this is a very different episode. It was fun. I figured, you know, I'll cut a couple of
music
guys.
Musical pop junk movies.
Yeah. Do a little splicey. I'll put in some clips. It'll be fun.
Yep.
Fun for the whole family.
Should I talk about Airheads?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. It was on the honorable mentions. I tried to stray from my original list, so... You know what, Evan? I don't know if we talked about it. You're going to have to listen to the episode.
Ooh.
I listened to every episode.
That was a big market tease, my friend. All right.
I'm going to say, if you can, please check it out on iTunes. Rate, review it.
Yeah, thanks, Corey.
Give us 5 stars.
Yeah, 5 stars. 5 star that bitch.
Leave comments.
I can't stress this enough. If there's a top 5 that you want us to
do, totally hit us up.
Let us know.
Yeah.
It's user
message,
reviews that we
comment.
Go by.
Yeah, leave a comment
go
in
to
the
Facebook
whichever.
What do you want to hear?
Yeah, exactly.
Go on Facebook.
You can just leave a comment on iTunes and be like, "You guys haven't done top 5 fucking baloney."
We check those.
Yes, we do.
We're oddly accessible.
We are very accessible.
To your house.
Go on Facebook, look up Pop Junk.
If you message us, I will immediately get back to you.
Yeah,
unless I'm at work.
We've got some time.
Is the Pop Junk site just your Facebook?
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah,
right
but
now.
It's popjunkmovies.com.
Yeah, yeah. You could always leave a comment on popjunkmovies.com. Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff I need to do. I have a Twitter handle that still is alive. It's pop_junk. Find me on Twitter. I have like 9 followers.
We didn't have to send any movies to hell today.
No.
Wait. Do you want me to do one right now?
Do you want to send a movie to hell?
I will send a movie straight to hell.
Evan, we did. We
straight
did,
to hell.
We did kind of send a
fire
movie.
Fire Brimstone. Fire Brimstone.
We did. We did kind of send a movie to heaven when I mentioned Airheads. I did say we mention it a lot. It's probably the last podcast I'm going to bring it up.
Do you want to do what movie do you want to send to hell?
All right, I got one. I got a quick one. I got one on the last minute.
Tell me a story.
We're gonna send. Matrix 3.
Oh my god.
Straight to hell.
That movie was such a fucking disappointment. Matrix Revolutions somehow made the original Matrix, which is a brilliant, amazing movie, less of a brilliant, amazing movie because of how shitty that movie was.
It killed the fucking story.
It did. It killed any momentum that second movie had, which wasn't a lot.
Like, I mean, the second movie kind of started it, started the downfall, but it's not as bad as the third fuck movie.
I meant to mention, I watched the last Indiana Jones movie the other day. It was The Last Crusade.
The Last Crusade, but then I watched The Last Indiana Jones. I don't. What movie are you talking
What's
about?
That?
I've never heard of that. I haven't either.
So,
but I did watch The Last.
All right. So,
Matrix Revolutions.
Do you want me to cast it into hell? Do you want me to?
Complete shit.
Yeah.
Completely ruined the story. Cast it out.
All right,
we got four people.
All right, so I'm doing this thing with my hands again. So, Matrix Revolution, I cast you into the fiery pits of hell. What were we talking about?
What?
So it's kind of weird that they made those first two Matrix movies.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad they never made a third movie because that second Matrix movie wasn't very good.
I had enough.
It was like a completely different movie than the first one.
So they never went on to make a third one, so I'm glad that never happened.
Because it was totally left open for another.
Yeah, they left it open for a sequel, but...
They could have made it... They could have, like, brought the series home.
They didn't take the bait. They didn't take the money, and they never made that.
Thank God they never made a third Matrix movie.
The action is good in the second movie.
Yeah, but...
That's about it.
Yeah, that's about it.
But we'll always have the first one.
What was the first one?
Yeah. All right. I have a weird memory gap, so I'm going to say we should just end this podcast right now.
What were we... What?
Music.
Oh, yeah, I like music.
Yeah.
Bryce.
All right, so this was Pop Junk Music.
Pop Junk _ music.
That's not a thing that exists.
but it can be if you want.
But it can be if you want, wink. All right, so this is Pop Junk Movies. I was Adam.
I was Corey.
I'm Dexter.
And I became Evan.
He did become Evan halfway through the podcast. Thank you for showing up. We were Pop Junk Movies, and we will see you at the movies question.
I'll see you at the concert.
Showman.
I'll see you at the party, Richter.
I'm behind the drum set every time.
Every time.